ago this Saturday, we experienced a horrifying event. The Sandy Hook Elementary shootings, 20 children and 6 educators were shot that day. This hour, mayors against illegal guns on how communities all over America have responded to those shootings. Last year, the mayors sent a letter to President Obama saying in part, as mayors, we are charged with keeping our communities safe, but too many of us have sat with mothers and fathers of children killed with guns. At the moving memorial service on Sunday evening, you said, is there even one step we can take to save another child or another parent or another town from the grief that has visited Tucson and Aurora and Oak Creek and Newtown and communities from Columbine to Blacksburg before that? Then surely we have an obligation to try. We have two guests with us, members of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. This hour of the program, Mayor Tom Barrett is one of the founding members of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. On April 25 of 2006, Boston Mayor Thomas Menino and New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg held a summit in New York City to discuss strategies for stopping the flow of illegal guns into American cities. That marked the launching of the organization, and there are now more than 1,000 mayors who are members. Mayor Barrett, along with 19 other mayors, met with President Obama and Attorney General Holder in August to discuss youth violence issues. He'll be with us most of this hour. Later in the hour, the mayor of the second largest city in Wisconsin, Mayor Paul Soglin of Madison, will be joining us. And we ask you, our audience, to concentrate on this question as we take phone calls this hour. Will we ever be able to make it harder for dangerous people to possess guns and easier for police and prosecutors to crack down on them and still protect our Second Amendment rights? Well, welcome phone calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page, we're very interested in hearing your thoughts about this very important issue. You can always leave messages on Facebook. That is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We'll also, during the hour, tell you about efforts that are underway all over the state of Wisconsin to mark the one-year Newtown anniversary, which, of course, is this Saturday. Mayor Barrett, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
You sound good, sir. Happy 60th birthday. You need a party now.
Well, I decided to throw myself a surprise party.
Oh, my gosh. Did you ever?
Yes.
Well, I'm glad that it was noticed now because I've been in that boat, as you well know.
I know that, yes.
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear you, and you sound very chipper. Thank you so much for being with us. This is a really hard anniversary, and I know you have worked on this issue for a long, long time. Let me ask you, what are the steps that we could take to save another child or another parent or another town from the grief that we all saw in Newtown a year ago Saturday?
Well, there are many steps that we can take and that we have to take as a society to do everything we can to minimize the violence. No one is naive enough to think that we are ever going to end violence. But if you just look at what has happened since Newtown, at least 173 children under 12 have died from gunshots in the United States, and that's since Newtown. So it is extremely important for us to have a day of remembrance for what happened at Newtown, and I very much respect the fact that the people in that community want to have it more of a private service, if you will. But when you think of the fact that 173 children under 12 have died from gunshot wounds since then in our country, it tells you that the problem has not disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really think has to happen is that there has to be a focus, because clearly after Newtown, there was an emotional outburst. And there were many people, including myself, that were optimistic that we would have some meaningful changes in some of the most basic gun laws that we have. But what we also saw is just how well organized and entrenched the opposition is to this. And as a result, we really haven't seen anything significant in the last year at the federal level or at the state level. And we know here in Wisconsin that we've had several high-profile incidents that have involved guns, not children, but have involved guns, here in southeastern Wisconsin, in Oak Creek and in Brookfield. And no steps have been taken, again, either at the federal level or at the state level. What I would love to see happen is I'd love to see the focus, quite honestly, on the change that I think would provide the greatest improvement, and that is the background check for private sales.
Mm-hmm. And would you tell me what effort needs to take place to implement that? Two questions here. Why is it that actually, many have said that things have gone in the opposite direction. We've had people who would be in favor of background checks in Colorado be recalled from office. So the opposite has happened. People saw this horrendous event and said something will happen to make us safer, and it didn't happen. Why is background checks so universally accepted, so difficult to enact?
I think that the answer is in your question. It is, I think, universally accepted to the extent that probably 90% of people in this country accept universal background checks. But in politics, as in anything else in life, intensity matters incredibly. And for most people, the majority of people, I believe, they think that background checks is simply common sense. That of course, if someone, like we had here in southeastern Wisconsin, and it happened in Brookfield, it didn't happen in the city of Milwaukee, you had an individual who had a domestic violence restraining order against him. So the justice system had worked. The justice system had worked in that his wife had gone in and got a restraining order. So that law worked. But what did not work is taking that judicial action and allowing that information to be shared in a manner that would prevent a person who was legally prevented from getting that gun, from getting that gun. And now with internet sales, and again, that was sadly and tragically a textbook example, and I'm talking about the Azana shootings here when I'm talking about this, is the individual who committed those shootings then made the contact over the internet. And met with an individual, again, not in Milwaukee, not even in Milwaukee County, to purchase that gun, and then went and killed his wife and several other women.
Mm-hmm.
That is a real-world tragic example of where a universal background check, I believe, could potentially have saved some lives. Now, I say could potentially because we know, and the opponents of changing these laws have said over and over again, well, a criminal is going to get a gun. And I agree that if someone is hell-bent on getting a gun, they're going to do everything they can to get a gun. That does not mean that the rest of us just sit back and say, fine, get the gun. But again, what happened in Colorado with the recalls, I believe, is that the intensity of the opposition far outweighed the what I would call complacency of the supporters.
And yet you look at the people, and I saw you at the memorial at the Oak Creek, the Sikh temple, very moving anniversary in August of this year. There were people from Newtown there, and the people from Newtown have been meeting with members of Congress day after day after day since the horrors there. And you would think that those human stories would move people to do something so that no parent has to go through that. It's not as though people haven't been intense on the other, if you can say, side of this issue.
Well, I agree with you, but what you have is you have a situation where there's a fear that's placed out there that anything that you do, any step that you take to deal with gun safety or to deal with reducing violence, that is just a first step in taking away people's guns.
Right.
And if people believe that, and I know there are people who are led to believe that, then they're going to say, oh, no. We're not letting the camel get his nose under the tent, and so even the things that are the most commonplace, common sense, are difficult to implement. But again, I think rather than having a wholesale shotgun approach, if you will, of trying to change many, many laws, I think that the focus has to be on the background checks for private sales.
Mm-hmm. I know that you met with President Obama, Attorney General Holder in August, just a little while ago, to look at youth violence issues. I'm sure that the status of the Obama Gun Violence Reduction Plan came up, and that there was a pretty soul-searching conversation about what we as a country do about that. What was discussed, Mayor Barrett?
Well, there were a lot of things discussed, and you had mayors of many, many different cities that were there, and most of them were larger cities. And I think that's one of the other factors that plays into all this. A lot of the what our police chief here in Milwaukee calls the slow-motion mass murders that take place in America take place in America's large cities. And they're oftentimes, most times, going to be young men of color, young men, primarily African-American young men, who are killed by other young African-American men. And that does not garner the attention that Newtown does. And I understand the difference. And so we have two different things that we're dealing with here in America. We've got these tragedies that occur, these high-profile tragedies that involve oftentimes many, many deaths, which are tragic beyond belief. At the same time, we have the daily violence that occurs in America, where the victim rarely gets anything more than a paragraph or two on page three of the local section of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing, though, that and if we're going to be honest about this, we have to be honest about this. What's happening here in Milwaukee, which is not that different from what's happening in other cities, and this is one of the things that we talked about with the president, is that if you looked at the background, this is now I'm talking about urban violence. If you look at the background of the victims, by and large, the background of the victims is very similar to the background of the assailants. And perhaps more surprisingly, and I just was looking at some data in the last week or two, I think that when you look at the number of arrests for the victims here in Milwaukee over the last year, the victims of homicide, the vast majority of them, again, there are going to be some sensational ones that are different, but the vast majority of them, the victims had more arrests on their record than the assailant.
Mm.
So what does that mean? It means that what we have here is we have a situation, and I'll use Milwaukee as an example. Milwaukee, I think, is a safe city. It's a safe city, but if you are involved in drug activity, drug sales, if you are involved in gang activity, things change dramatically. So people who are involved in risky activity, drug dealers, people involved in other risky behavior, they're the ones that are most likely to be the victims and the assailants. And we can't ignore that. We can't ignore that that's part of the problem as well.
Mm-hmm. And the easy accessibility of guns, how are they getting into Milwaukee?
Well, what's interesting is that here in Milwaukee, for many, many years, we had a gun dealer who provided many of the guns. In fact, it was a dealer that oftentimes was on the high end of the list. Sometimes I think it maybe even led the list nationally of guns that were sold that were later used in crimes. That business has changed its business format dramatically. And again, it was not located within the city of Milwaukee. It was located just outside the city in West Milwaukee. But that business now has become more of a gun club, shooters club. But you've got other gun dealers that are located outside the city, so people can get their guns there. And that gets to the problem of the straw purchases, where you've got many times girlfriends or wives who are getting the guns for their husband or their boyfriend, which is also an issue. But you cannot ignore the proliferation of what's going on the Internet. That I think is changing things quite dramatically as well.
So if you were going to buy a gun on the Internet, all you have to do is, I don't even know where you could look. You would look at a place, there are probably many of them, and you just make a transaction on the Internet?
Oh, I guarantee you could do it within 5 minutes. You could
really?
find a site on the Internet where you could go in and make the arrangements to purchase a gun.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Mayor Tom Barrett is our guest for most of the show. Mayor Paul Soglin will also join us a little bit later. We're doing this program today, of course, because Saturday is the anniversary of the Newtown shooting. So we're thinking about the tragedy of violence, the number of people who were killed. This was just particularly dramatic because they were all these little kids and their teachers, and it just tore your heart out of you to have this happen. But violence, of course, is all over, and violence in cities is something to be reckoned with, and gun violence is something to be reckoned with. So what do we do is the question of this hour. We'll start taking phone calls for Mayor Barrett. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page, please leave messages there as well as the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This Saturday is the one-year anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary shootings. At 1:30, all over the state of Wisconsin, churches, universities, community buildings will be joining together, ringing their bells 26 times at 1:30, statewide memorial for Newtown. There are also special events taking place in churches. We'll tell you about a few of those as we continue. Let's take one call for Mayor Barrett, and then Mayor Paul Soglin will be joining our conversation. Andre in Clintonville. Hello, Andre. Andre, hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Go right ahead, sir.
Hello, Andre.
Yeah, it's good to have you back up on your feet, Mayor Bear. It's good to hear your voice again.
It's great. Tomorrow I'm going to try to swim across Lake Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to say I think that the gun policies in America have to be worked out through the Democrats and Republicans. You have to move the NRA out of the way, move the lobbyists out of the way, and these two political parties need to sit down together, and they need to discuss this behind closed doors with no interference from big money, gun manufacturers, the NRA, and they can finally resolve the gun problems in this country as long as they move that extra entity out of the way.
Well, I would love to see that happen, but I don't think it's certainly not going to happen in the foreseeable future. Again, I share your concern. I would love to see that happen, but I've witnessed for too long just the strength of those who are opposed to changing the gun laws. And it comes in two different areas. Of course, there's money. There's big money that comes in. But probably equally as important, if not more important, is its ability to have everyday people who probably should be more concerned about their pensions or whether they have jobs or whether their kids can get an education. They get them so riled up on this issue that becomes the number one issue for them. And for many people, if they're living a life that they dream of living, that they know they're not getting rich, they love their family, and they love to hunt. So taking away their family or taking away their right to hunt just terrifies them. And so anybody who has ever even tried to address what I consider to be the legitimate issues surrounding this are dealt with the disdain. And the way I describe this is there's really a cultural difference here. And I'll say this, because I think that there's some reality to it. If someone is outside and they yell duck, if you're in Vilas County, your reaction is going to be, get the gun, let's shoot the duck. But sadly, that there are going to be some neighborhoods in Milwaukee, in the central city, where if someone yells duck, you duck.
Mm-hmm.
And that one word, duck, captures the incredible cultural divide on this issue. Because it really shows how different people's minds work on this. And it's not to say one group is good or one group is bad or one person is good or one person is bad, but they just have different realities.
I heard somebody on the radio this morning saying if you frame this issue as a mental health issue, you're a Republican. If you frame this issue as an access to illegal guns or easy access to firearms, you are a Democrat. So how do you take, I think there's some validity in that, so how do you take those two framings of an issue and put them together so that we can reduce the violence?
Well, again, I'm going to go back to how I started at the top of the show. If someone has an involuntary mental health commitment, if the justice system has already acted, if there's been a finding of involuntary mental commitment against an individual, and that individual is still permitted by our laws to go out and get a gun over the internet, we failed. So is mental health part of this? Of course mental health is part of this. But this to say mental health is the only portion of this, I think is not a truthful analysis of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm assuming that the man who killed his wife in Brookfield had mental health issues. I don't dispute that at all. Clearly, he had mental health issues. He had a lot of anger. There was tremendous anger there. The justice system knew it, but the ability to stop him from getting a gun in the real world, and that's where mayors live. We live in the real world. Makes it much, much more difficult for us to reduce what I consider to be unnecessary or avoidable violence. And again, I don't want anybody to think that I think that we're going to have a time when there's going to be no violence. I'd love to think that, but it is so ingrained in our society right now that I just want us to start taking some significant steps, not to take away legitimate hunters' guns, not to take away legitimate sportsmen's guns, but to deal with the real issues that we face of unnecessary and avoidable violence.
Thanks, Andre, for the call. Lynn in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, Kathleen and Mayor Barrett. Two of my four children are policemen. One is a patrolman in Racine and the other a sheriff's deputy in Merced County, California. And daily I'm afraid for them that someone in a moment of emotional passion due to a domestic or a drug call with bad aim and a big clip will take one of my boys out.
What?
And they hunt. You know, it's horrible for me.
Well, first, let me say you must be very proud as a mother to have two sons who are in law enforcement. And you did something right. Obviously, you instilled values in them, and thank you for allowing your sons to be part of what I consider to be a very noble profession. And I agree with you. We're asking men and women to put their lives on the line every day to be out there. And there are times, oftentimes, when they can be outgunned. They can be outgunned. And I know it's a dangerous profession. I know that they miss holidays, they miss birthdays, they miss their family at special times because they're trying to make us safer. And I think we're putting them at a disadvantage when we don't have laws that protect them.
Thank you, Lynn, very much for the call. Let's go to Pat in Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. You know, to that point, I also think what lets down some of our law enforcement is the court system we have. And, you know, some of the same people I see that, you know, are fixated on the gun problem and the illegal guns, they have nothing to say about the criminal who's been tried seven or eight different times, has a rap sheet that's extensive, and then lo and behold goes out and commits murder. And, you know, I think on one hand we're so worried about incarceration and the incarceration rates in our inner cities that we are letting criminals out on the street for three, four, five, six, seven chances, and then all of a sudden they commit a murder, and now we're fixated on an illegal gun.
Mayor Barrett.
Well, I appreciate your comments, Pat, and I can tell you as a mayor, again, I'm not one of those people you're talking about because I know, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, here in Milwaukee, oftentimes the victim and the perpetrator both have 10 prior arrests. And there's something wrong if you've got 10 prior arrests and you're out on the street. And I do think that we have to do what we can. But again, I'm going to point to that domestic violence situation here where the court system did act appropriately. The court system did act appropriately by saying that the individual could not have a gun. But how is that information then disseminated? How are gun dealers supposed to know that?
Thank you, Pat, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Before we introduce Paul Soglin, mayor of Madison, I want to ask you at this point, what role do states have? What role do cities have? What role does the federal government have? Do you have some states in this country now that make it much more difficult to get guns illegally? Or
there are, and I know Mayor Bloomberg, who was leaving office in New York, has received a lot of criticism because of his active involvement in mayors against illegal guns. But I think when people look at New York, what strikes the most, and it did not begin under Mayor Bloomberg's tenure, but it certainly has continued under his tenure, is the dramatic reduction of violence in New York City. Now, New York City has some of the most relevant, if you will, gun laws that we have in the country. Here in Wisconsin, back in the 1990s, the governor and the state legislature at the time took away the ability for local units of government to have gun laws that are different from state law. In other words, there's a state preemption here. I would argue that there are different situations in urban areas that do justify different laws than they are in rural areas where guns are used predominantly for hunting. But we as a city here are prohibited from enacting those laws because the state has come in and taken away our local control on that issue.
Let's introduce Mayor Paul Soglin. Mayor Barrett is with us for a couple more minutes, and Mayor Soglin will be with us for until the remainder of the hour is over. Mayor Paul Soglin, thank you very much for being with us. Also a member of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Thanks for being with us, sir. Mayor Soglin? Well, maybe he stepped away.
He's pretty shy there. I thought he didn't want to talk.
Well, Mayor Soglin?
Yes.
There you are. Hi. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Thank you so much for being with us. Let me ask you the same question that we started the hour with, and that's can you give us an understanding of why after this horrendous event where we all cried after Newtown and we couldn't believe that anything this horrific could happen, we are looking at legislation in many states that seems to be quite the opposite of what a lot of people wanted. We can't even get background checks, universal background checks. Do you think we will eventually, or what's creating this lack of movement on this issue?
Two things. One is brainwashing by the NRA, and the other is intimidation by the NRA. You got to give the NRA credit. They are able to twist and manipulate their own members. There's an enormous number of NRA members who are gun owners, who are hunters, who think there ought to be reasonable controls and restraints. And the second is the political power and the muscle that they've got, where they're taking us in this really death spiral, and they've succeeded at it for 25, 30 years now, of saying that the solution to gun violence is more guns. And as more people die from gun violence and firearms violence, they have created a culture where we believe, we as Americans, that the solution is more firearms.
What about the amount of money, Mayor Barrett, that the other side, if you can call it the other side, Mayor Bloomberg put money in political campaigns during the course of the last year to get movement traction on this issue? Is that the way this has to be conducted, by funding campaigns where people are concerned about access to illegal arms?
Well, what happened in several of the races where he got involved, or when the organization got involved, is it was used against them. The message then became, don't let the mayor of New York's money dictate what's going to happen in Colorado or wherever it was taking place. And that's a pretty powerful message anywhere in this country outside of New York. So that has the ability to backfire as well. It's going to take people in communities, and I oftentimes think it's going to be the mothers, and it's going to be the women who are going to be the ones that are going to be most relevant in this, because they have the understanding of what's at stake here when it comes to their children and their husbands.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Soglin, what do you think? Does it take an equal amount of money on the other side, or as many lobbyists, or what?
It's going to probably take more money. But the other thing that's necessary is it's going to take a constant and persistent day-to-day commitment by those of us who want responsible gun legislation. The problem is that people have make-it-or-break issues that determine how they vote for a candidate. That may be a question of choice. It may be a position on taxes or no taxes. But when it comes to guns and firearms. While for the NRA, that is the make it or break it litmus test. For people who are calling for responsible gun legislation, it's not a make it or break issue. And so they're letting politicians off the hook. They allow them to wander into this morass of violence. Until that is addressed, we're not going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathleen, that's very consistent with what I was saying, that intensity matters mm-hmm. in politics. And I think what Mayor Soglin is saying is that for those who are opposed to changing gun laws, this is not only the number one issue, it is the only issue.
Mm-hmm.
For people who support common sense changes, they are such common sense changes that they can't get riled up over them, or they don't get riled up over them. I don't know if you agree with that, Mayor Soglin, but I certainly do. There's just such an intensity disconnect there. It's off the charts.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one call for both of you, and then Mayor Barrett will let you leave the air with us. Let's go to Matt in the Western UP. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
All right, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciate both of the mayors talking about this issue.
All right, what do you have to say, Matt?
Well, I've been in law enforcement for 25 years. Most of that was in Nashville, Tennessee. I actually retired from there, and now I'm an officer up here in the Western UP. And I'm also an ordained minister. So a lot of times in the course of duty, I've been asked to be the one to notify next of kin. That was one of my many jobs in Nashville. I also serve, you know, as one of the first task force cut down violence in the mostly in the inner city projects. And I can tell you that one of the things that I just get exasperated about when I hear even higher ups in law enforcement talking about it is when they legislate laws. I really think that the legislators all across the country don't take the time to listen, especially to law enforcement, to get a better understanding of what laws might be working well into the future. And of course, we've had a Supreme Court ruling a couple years ago that took away a very important tool to law enforcement on traffic stops. And that was, pardon the pun, it was literally a shot in our feet.
Matt, what do you think we ought to do when it comes to gun legislation? Do we need more?
Well, I'm not an NRA supporter, but I do believe in the Second Amendment, and I think that there should be longer waiting periods. I've handled hundreds of violent domestic cases over that 25 years,
mm-hmm.
and the cases that the mayors are talking about, though, there's two different mentalities when you're talking about mass shootings in rural or urban areas versus young people, mostly of color, but not always, in the urban housing areas and around those areas.
Mm-hmm.
You've got crime in the urban areas, especially in the housing areas, motivated mostly by money, drugs. And then you have people that do these mass shootings that absolutely there's a mental instability.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Barrett, you want to respond before you have to go?
I don't disagree with anything he's saying, that there's two different issues here. There clearly is the issue of the high-profile urban, suburban, rural massacres that we see in, like, Newtown, and then the daily slow-motion mass murders that we see in the streets of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're different issues, and we can't ignore one or the other. But right now, quite honestly, they're both being ignored.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Soglin, you will stay with us. Mayor Barrett,
yes.
take it easy, will you, please?
We'll do that.
A little bit of fish oil. That's
okay,
what I do.
Yeah, right. Well, thank you both very much.
Thanks, Mayor Barrett. Mayor Tom Barrett with us. Mayor Paul Soglin remains with us as we talk about guns in our society and what's happened or what has not happened in terms of making guns less prevalent and the illegal purchase of guns less prevalent in our society. How do you think we as a society should be remembering Newtown, should be remembering these mass shootings, or do we put too much emphasis on those at the expense of the kind of violence that cities are seeing? I guess, is it good for us to draw attention, media attention, to Saturday, and should we draw more attention to what happens with guns during the rest of the year, Mayor Soglin?
I think both of them are critical issues. The mass shootings, which have increased at such a rapid rate, 62 of them over the last 30 years, as well as the violence on the streets. But you know, going back to our last caller, a couple of observations came to mind as he spoke. First, if you go back 30 or 40 years ago, most law enforcement agencies sided with the NRA in regards to gun legislation. Something's happened which has split the Police Chiefs Association and other law enforcement associations. Part of it is the NRA moving to such an extreme in terms of accessibility of firearms. And the other part is law enforcement realizing the incredible danger that's posed by so many people with weapons. Now, going back to two callers, let's keep something else in mind. It is far more likely that an individual is going to be shot by a firearm wielded by themselves, by a member of their family, or a friend. That in most instances, the generic homicide is going to be one involving people we know. And so this notion that we're at danger from strangers carrying firearms, yes, that's true, especially when we get the mass shootings. But let's keep in mind that it's our family and friends that are more likely to fire upon one another than anybody else.
Mayor Paul Soglin is with us. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, we'd love to have you leave messages there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This Saturday is marking the one-year Newtown anniversary. There are events in various parts of the state that will be events of remembrance and resolve to work for peace in our communities. In Appleton, 1 to 1:30 at the First United Methodist Church of Appleton. In Franklin, 1 to 2:30, St. James Catholic Church. In Milwaukee, Calvary Presbyterian Church from 1:30 until 2:30. In Madison, the First Unitarian Society of Madison from 1 until 2. If you know of other events, I'm sure there are others in various parts of the state, please leave messages for us on our Facebook page, and we will be happy to add that list. And there will be, all over the state of Wisconsin, at 1:30 on Saturday, churches, universities, and community buildings will be ringing their bells 26 times for the 20 children who were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and for the teachers, the six teachers, who also lost their lives on that day. More phone calls in a moment from Mayor Paul Soglin. He is with Mayors Against Illegal Guns. There are over 1,000 mayors in this country who are active in that group, and we're talking about what they're asking for and listening to what you think on this issue. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mayor Paul Soglin, a mayor of Madison, is with us now, and we're talking about guns and how to become a safer society. Claire in Baraboo is our next caller. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen. What a great forum. And thank you, Mayor Soglin, for joining us today.
Sure.
Kathleen, this is my theory, and I'd be interested to hear Mayor Soglin's reaction to this. There's such a problem with the people that are reasonable and sane and thinking when it comes to these emotional issues versus the people, like Mayor Sondland mentioned, it's so easy for people like the NRA to absolutely brainwash people with misinformation and get them so worked up with sensationalism, with fear that their guns are going to be taken away from them. We on the other side, the side in favor of better controls, have to figure out a way to sensationalize, for lack of a better phrase, our message, to get it across to people in a way that gets their attention, because people are getting brainwashed by lies.
Mayor Sondland.
And part of it is not just lies, but it is omissions. One of the things that the gun lobby has done, and the NRA, is it has worked to destroy existing records and to prevent health authorities, like the Center for Disease Control, to maintain accurate records about gun and firearm deaths so that we can't document just how bad the situation is. When you look at the data comparing the United States to other countries, whether it's Britain or Japan or Canada, you know, they think we're lunatics. As in the face of more and more gun deaths, we simply expand the network of people who can own firearms. And if you think about it, starting with the handgun, that is not the great defensive weapon that one wants. If you're concerned about protection, especially someone who is not a professional, and ask a police officer who's ever had to fire a weapon at another human being, no matter how notorious they may be, that is not an easy chore. It's a very difficult responsibility. But you don't want a handgun. You want a shotgun. Now, in terms of the automatic weapons, the more we see in terms of automatic weapons is more mass murders. And the notion that arming people so that we can then take on the perpetrators of these mass shootings is simply nonsense. Of those 62 mass murders, there's not a single one that was successfully controlled by a civilian with a firearm. And in fact, in those situations where there's multiple shootings and a civilian has been involved, the civilians are more likely, well, since none of them have ever been successful in stopping a perpetrator, the civilian is more likely to be killed or wounded themselves. And in fact, the only instance of a so-called civilian intervening in one of these shootings was actually an off-duty police officer. And in that particular instance, the perpetrator was out of ammunition. So we've got to get to the truth of these events. We've got to get to the underlying culture in our society. And, you know, we were asked the question a little bit earlier by Kathleen about what this means in terms of the children in the multiple shootings or the children who might be killed on the streets. And I look at it from their perspective. I'm 8 years old, I'm 12 years old, and I'm entitled to pursue happiness and lead a healthy life. And if I was old enough and mature enough to make these decisions, what decisions would I make to ensure that?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think these kids would take this perverted view of the Second Amendment. You got to remember, the Second Amendment speaks of a well-regulated militia. That's who is entitled to have the firearms. And all these folks walking around with their semi-automatic, their automatic weapons, They are not a well-regulated militia.
Thank you, Claire, very much for your call. Let's go to Ron next in Eau Claire. Hi, Ron.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mayor Skoglund, I applaud a lot of things you have just said because you're hitting so many things right on the button. But one thing about these so-called fanatics in the gun industry and in our Congress, they don't have to worry about if they go against the will of the people. Look at how many NRA members supported gun legislation, and it never even brought up. They're so insulated by redistricting. They go back to, and wave their flag in front of their members, whether it's the Tea Party or whoever. And
you're
they have nothing to worry
right.
about until, as a society, we stand up and say enough is enough and vote for conscience instead of listening to the NRA tell us that President Obama was going to take our guns, the boogeyman's going to come.
Well, it is when you look at the one issue that just about everybody in the country, I mean, 90% of the people who live here believe that the least we can do, and we could all agree on this, is to make sure that we have background checks on people, which seems like a highly reasonable thing to do. And yet that didn't happen. It really is extraordinary to think that the will of the people, that many people, Mayor Skoglund, was so disregarded.
Well, two things. And I think our caller has really hit one of them on the head, which is this is one of the issues that is controlled by the malapportionment of both the United States House of Representatives and our individual state legislatures. We're going to have to get that corrected so that 30% of the people who support an NRA position aren't able to control as much as 60% of a legislative body because of malapportionment. That's one part of it. The second is simply the logic of looking what has happened in the United States of America since the background checks have dropped off and the restrictions on the semi-automatic weapons. There's just a direct correlation. There was greater public support for these controls immediately after the tragedy at Newtown.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've sort of moved back to the center.
Mm-hmm.
But the center still has a vast majority of American people looking for reasonable controls on background checks, the type of weapons, that sort of thing.
Thank you so much for being with us, Mayor Paul Skoglund. We also thank Mayor Tom Barrett, both with Mayors Against Illegal Guns. We'd like to hear your comments. Please go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We'll also have a listing there of events taking place to commemorate Newtown. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this program. Thank you for listening and for commenting on the Ideas Network.